Welcome to episode 131 of The Sound of Football. I'm Chris Nee, and I'm honoured to be joined by Sound of Football stalwarts Terry DeFellin and Graeme Sibley. Hello, gentlemen.
Look, the honour is ours, Chief, I can assure you.
Yes, welcome along, Chris. Welcome back, Chris, actually.
Thank you very much. I think it's four or five so far now. I've been a proper guest on one, and I've popped up on a cameo on various others, including Colchester, Swindon, Supermarine.
Oh, well, who could forget that? That was a magical afternoon.
Yes.
That was, and that all washed down with the good help of the good captain.
The good captain,
if you remember,
did stave off frostbite for us that day. It was bitterly cold that day.
It was, and very enjoyable. It was too.
Yeah, it was. It was a cracking day out. Which when you're sat in a pile of concrete in the middle of the Essex countryside, you don't actually see it coming like there in the it was middle of December, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. It was a cracking afternoon out.
Second round day, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was. It was because Colchester won, and they won 1-0 against Swindon Supermarine, and they just got through to third round of the cup, and their fans were booing.
Yes,
yeah. it was that kind of match.
But I do remember Swindon had a very very vocal support there, and I think
yes, she was quite vocal, wasn't she?
She was.
She did sound like she was being tickled in a very interesting place.
We should probably move from teams that we don't support to teams that we do. the topic this evening, plucked out of the air just before the show, is the nature of supporting a foreign team, which all of us do. We have teams all over the world, and also we'll come on and talk about how we perceive foreign supporters of our own clubs as well, because it's a two-way relationship, this globalisation of football and the access that you get to teams all over the place. But I guess the first place to start would be the both of you have a strong connection with Borussia Dortmund in Germany, and step one really is, how did that come about and how does it manifest itself over the weekend, say when you're in England rather than in Germany actually watching a game?
Well, the whole reason it came about was back in 2004, a friend of ours who was one of the a third of the production team behind the Onion Bag with myself and Terry got married, and he decided that for his stag do, he'd have a weekend in Germany, which at the time seemed a bit of an odd place for everyone to go to. But he left us in charge of the details of it. And we decided that, Terry said, well, there's loads of football around in that area. Around that sort of time, we could use the much-vaunted German transportation system and get around the whole of the Ruhr Valley. There's bound to be two home games on. And luckily enough, the weekend we were there, we went to Cologne to start off with. That's where he wanted to go, and that's where we were based, which is very good for links around that area. Unfortunately, on that weekend that we went, Cologne were at home, but they were at home to Bayern Munich.
Mm.
And
we didn't have a chance of getting
a ticket. We did not have a chance of getting a ticket there. But we could get a ticket for, or could get quite a few tickets for Dortmund against Hansa Rostock.
Hansa Rostock, yeah.
And this was on the Saturday, on the 2:30 kick. Well, the 3:30 kickoff is Central European time. And the following day, on the live match, was just up the road from Dortmund in Gelsenkirchen, which was Schalke against Hertha Berlin. So the first game we went to was Dortmund against Hansa Rostock. And this was the... Who was in the Dortmund side that
Jan Koller was in the
Jan
Dortmund
Koller,
side.
Thomas Rosicki
I believe
was
Thomas Rosicki
well,
was still with him in there. Yeah.
And they put on a fantastic show. I think it was 4-1,
something like
wasn't
4-0,
it?
Something sort 4-1, 4-0, yeah. 4-1. It was a handsome home win.
Yeah, it was good. It was about 3-0 at half time. Koller scored a hat trick, didn't he?
I believe so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was very drunk.
We were sort of pretty much wowed by the Westfalen as we got there, because seeing 83,000 jubilant German people and just singing along and waving their mighty flags,
and the yellow wall as well, the Südtribüne, which is an astonishing sight. And yeah, after years of watching English football, to walk into that was I think actually literally jaw-dropping, certainly it from was. My point of yeah. view.
And then, of course, they had Beer Man as well.
And then Beer Man, they had people with beer barrels strapped onto their back dispensing beer while you were sat watching the game. So, yeah, again, a big culture change from England and a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and really just from there, just utterly hooked.
But why did we choose Dortmund over Schalke? Because, I mean, conceivably...
I think
it's worth pointing out that we arrived at our choices independently as well. Having
yeah,
said that as well.
Yeah, I think the thing was that it was just the whole day. I mean, granted, as with most stag weekends, you know, your ability to function diminishes significantly as the time in the foreign country progresses. But I think what it was our just general experience of Dortmund was a lot better. Wasn't
yeah.
really. I mean, it's.
But I think, in fairness, this is also because we were horribly hungover by the time we got to Gelsenkirchen.
Yeah, this is true.
We may not have given it the fair shake.
No.
And the atmosphere in the stadium was different, though.
Yeah.
They were a lot more bad-tempered in Schalke than they were at Dortmund.
Yeah. And that was a comfortable home win as well. That was 3-0.
That's right. Yeah, they won comfortably.
And Hertog had a player sent off.
And yet still, there was something about them that was a little bit too. I don't know. They seemed to come across as being a bit angry and a bit tense.
Yeah.
Whereas Dortmund was much more jolly.
Yeah.
But again, this may simply be through the perception.
It was weird though, because it was right at the end of the season, wasn't it? And
yeah.
And I think that there wasn't really anything to play for in any of the games, and yet there was still this huge crowd that was still getting.
Yeah, well, turn up.
Yeah,
extraordinary stadium, Gelsenkirchen. There that looks down on the whole city. Massive.
Mm.
But yeah. So I think that Dortmund was in that. Then when we came back, when we decided to go back, the first choice would be, well, we'll just go to Dortmund.
Yeah.
It didn't really enter our heads to go back to Schalke.
No, we have never been back. Well,
no,
I've never
been back to Schalke,
so,
no.
Yeah. You both have lifelong teams in England. Where does Dortmund fit on the scale of identity, as it were?
Well, I've been lucky enough to see Arsenal play Dortmund when they came over last year in the Champions League, and for me it was great. It was a great experience to actually get on there. Of course, you know, I was cheering on Arsenal, but it was good just to see Dortmund again in the flesh, not playing at the Signal Iduna,
the Westfalen.
Yes. Yeah.
It's Palace first always. I watch an awful lot of Bundesliga because of the other things that I do. I do watch an awful lot of Dortmund. I would probably suggest that on television I've watched Dortmund more this season than I have Crystal Palace. But then that's because Dortmund is available for me to watch, whereas Crystal Palace isn't. But, I mean, in terms of, if in the extremely unlikely event that the two teams were to ever meet in a competitive fixture, it would be Palace. No question about it, without any hesitation.
I've been a slightly lazy Bundesliga fan for a few years now, influenced in part by yourselves. I've found that the highlights show on ITV4 has helped me to stay in tune with my sort of slightly half-assed affiliation in Germany. What effect do you think that will have on the UK's Bundesliga support? That's just the fact that you can tune in for an hour every Monday night and see everything that's going on and keep right up to date.
I think it's amazing that you've got free-to-air access to the Bundesliga in the UK. I think ITV4 have to be congratulated for what is a very smart acquisition. They would have paid virtually nothing for it, but the quality of football at the moment in the Bundesliga is so high because of the it's really, really profiting from the legacy of their youth restructuring in the early part of the last decade. So many good players coming through that it's probably among the top most entertaining leagues in Europe, if not, you know, it certainly rivals the Premier League in that respect. And it's great to see that people watch and people watching it as well, and people are watching it. And I think that perhaps that other broadcasters may take notice after a while and feel that perhaps there is something that can be developed there. As Serie A perhaps goes into something of a decline.
Well, yeah, I think
it may well be that the Bundesliga would be a good replacement league for hipsters over here who fancy watching, maybe a bit disillusioned with the Premier League and fancy watching something else.
Yeah, I think there is certainly a if you want to see a top level league at the moment that hasn't got some dark shadow behind it, then, you know, really, the Bundesliga is probably your only choice at the moment. Italy, you know, it's always got its problems there. Spain, you could look at, well, but you've only got two teams that are going to do anything there. And then, obviously, you've got the Premier League with its three-ring circus that...
Yeah, I mean, our guest host next week may make a strong case for France.
Oh, my. Yeah.
He may indeed. Who's that then? That's some bloke called Andrew.
Oh, blimey, not him again.
Captain Gibney.
Captain Gibney.
I thought we got rid of him. Well, I thought we saw him off.
Serie A, of course, is a really interesting point because it had almost the same treatment, if a little more profile, back in the 90s through Gazzetta and through the Sunday afternoon games. But my personal experience of Serie A has driven me away recently, and I wonder if other people might experience the same thing, which is I've identified very strongly for a while now with Napoli, which dates back to sort of being aware of them and Maradona previously, and then when they came back to the fore once they got re-promoted in the last sort of 6 or 7 years, fell back in love with them completely. But actually finding it very difficult to give Italian football any credibility now, really. And just find it difficult to think, if I'm going to commit time to something that's so far away that does mean watching on a small screen on a betting website, or does mean that if I ever want to go and see them in person, getting on a plane and going to the south of Italy, really, the problems that Italian football is suffering from kind of puts me off. It drives me ever closer to the Bundesliga on that basis. So it'll be interesting to see if other people go through the same process.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, interestingly, Serie A, I think, has been picked up. I think I'd heard somewhere that it's been picked up by BT for next season when they launch their new channel. So there's clearly is a market for Serie A in the UK, and there are people, again, as you say, Chris, it's a legacy from the 90s, James Richardson, Paul Gascoigne, and all that. It's just interesting to see whether or not that keeps hold. But, I mean, I wonder whether or not part of the issue with supporting a foreign team is, you know, and maybe international listeners from the United States might have some insight into this, who support European teams. I wonder how strong the feeling is and how it goes if you realistically never think you're ever likely to go and see them play. I mean, I follow a team in Australia called Melbourne Victory, who play in the A-League. I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I have got family in Melbourne. That's why I follow them. But I don't know when I'm going to be ever going back out there again. And if I do, I have no idea whether it'll be in season and whether I'll ever have the chance to go and see them play. So I wonder to what extent that hinders people from committing to an overseas club. Chris, I mean, you know, you talk about Napoli and like the idea of you maybe going to Naples anytime soon to watch them play, from what you said, suggests that that's very unlikely.
Yeah, Naples would be unlikely. I think that is partly a response to allegations surrounding the club itself, but also Italian football in general. Whereas I think if I were more committed to a German team or a French team, even a Spanish team, I'm not particularly interested in Spanish football, but if I did have one, I think I would consider going. But, you know, European weekends away aren't completely off the table for me. I went to try and see Guernsey FC over the weekend. I don't even have I have no great affection for them, just an interest. I think the fact that I have no intention of going to Naples possibly just makes me question more whether I do particularly identify with the club and whether I do feel part of that community.
Well, we need to organise a team for you then in the Bundesliga. I know you, in the past, you've expressed a certain fondness for those, you described them as beautiful bastards, called Hannover 96.
Which remains. But it's one of those things where I haven't fully committed to it because I have so much other stuff going on in football. I've moved closer to Villa, so I make a few games there. I have a very strong commitment to my non-league team, and also MLS, which was the genesis of this conversation, really, was the fact that I found myself at 3 a.m. running around the flat celebrating a goal last week in the MLS playoffs.
Well, so tell us then, Chris, because there's a thing you've asked us about Dortmund. Why DC United?
More or less plucked out of thin air, actually, DC United. I started following MLS almost as an area of academic study, found the whole process fascinating of setting up a league from nothing. And
rightly so, yeah.
Having this shadow of NASL over it as well and reacting to that.
Yeah.
And I started to read around it, get interested in it, funnily enough, through the winter, just as the new season was approaching in 2009. Watched a few games, felt a bit of affiliation to, you know, just as you do. As Danny Baker says, you watch a game, you pick a team. And yep. It tended to be DC when they were playing that I sort of picked in those situations. And then asked a few people on Twitter, you know, I'm looking for a team, which one should I pick? And a lot of them threw, you know, LA at me or New York and various reasons. And then somebody just said DC United if you want history and nothing else. And I thought, well, I'm a Villa fan. They are the perfect team for me. Because that's the stick that gets used to beat us with all the time as Villa fans is that we're obsessed with history and there's not much else to the club. And I like the fact that they're almost, even at this stage, a fallen giant of MLS because they won everything going in the early years. And up until this year, it had been 4 years before they reached the playoffs. So it's just the little things that kind of drag you in. And then, of course, once you make that commitment initially, that's it then, pretty much.
They've got some very groovy kits. They wear black, DC, which is always good, I think. I've been fascinated by the MLS for exactly the same reason as you, Chris, ever since it started. I've been intrigued by the idea of America playing football. And I've always been very... I'm in love America. I love American culture. I've always thought it would be great if they took football seriously and played it. And I find it, for some reason, I get a strange sense of gratification to see them embracing the game as they are. The closest I've got to an MLS club myself would be DC, but that's because traditionally I tend to support teams from that area. My baseball team is the Orioles, and my American football team, very, very loosely, is the Redskins. So that's kind of where I am with that. But I don't watch enough of it really for it to engage me, probably just because I'm watching too much English and German football. But tell me, Chris, where are DC now? Are they in still or are they gone?
They are one foot in and one foot out at the moment. The game that they played last week, midweek, was the second leg of the Eastern Conference semi-final against New York Red Bulls. And they scraped through that in dramatic circumstances. They played their first leg of the final against Houston Dynamo yesterday and suffered from a very poor refereeing decision that completely turned the game and lost 3-1. So they have a mountain to climb. I actually would quite fancy them at 3-1 at home in the second leg, but they've just got a mountain of injuries, piles and piles of injuries. So it's a shame.
Dynamo made it to the final last year, didn't they?
They did. The final
lost narrowly to LA.
To LA. The final this year looks very likely now after the first leg of the conference finals to be the same because LA beat Seattle 3-0 as well. So they're pretty much three, you would think.
Right, so Seattle out, still not made it to an MLS Cup final.
No, well, up until this year, they hadn't won a playoff series at all, so they'd kind of they made the postseason and then flaked out. So a positive step for them, I think. There's a case that they are becoming, you know, the best team probably outside LA in the league, but there are teams in the East that have a bit more resilience.
So, do you think that when Seattle win their first MLS Cup, that they'll go on and form a dynasty? Because they are very apparently a very, very large, well-supported club. I mean, they get European-style gates there, don't they? Because gates of, what, 30, 35, yep, something like that? Or is that still the case?
Yeah.
Do you think that is MLS set up for something like that? Or is it more like a lot of other American sports in which it tends to be a bit more cyclical?
I don't know enough about Seattle really to know if they're embracing it, but I wrote a couple of years back about the possibility of the first real dynasty. I mean, DC United, to a certain extent, could claim to be the first, but it was never quite as emphatic as a dynasty. But I think that the Super Draft is going to wane in importance as the homegrown player rule comes in and the designated player rule gets relaxed and relaxed, and they can put money into either star players or the academy or both, really. And it was actually about the New York Cosmos, which first made me think this could be, if they come in, which would have been next year, they could be the first club that doesn't really bother with the draft because they can put their money into youth development and keep the players because of the homegrown player rule, and they can bring in star players, three of them, on big money. So it's possible now that a dynasty could happen, but it would take very smart investment, and I don't know if Seattle really are taking that approach. I think they would still like to bring the best players through the draft.
Well, that just brings us, because that also brings us back to our topic. I wonder how likely it is that you'll get when the Cosmos returns to MLS, and one assumes it is a matter of when rather than if. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gone to all the trouble of forming the club in the first place. How much support do you think they can rely on from overseas? Because it's a very, very famous, very glamorous name, the Cosmos,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, well, and I wonder whether it's certainly one that they can brand and stick out there, isn't it? Really?
You get there's a lot of Americans who support European teams. There's loads.
Yeah.
In fact, if I'm reading it right, maybe my insights are a little bit out of date, but my understanding is that MLS fans may have a slight issue with. I believe they used to call them Euro snobs. I don't know whether they still call. I don't know whether that's a term anymore. But American guys who have European teams. I wonder whether or not with the introduction of the Cosmos, we might see the reverse. We might not for the first time, because I think there were some people who adopted Galaxy because of David Beckham over in Europe. But I wonder if you might see Cosmos shirts being worn in London or Barcelona. Mm. Or Paris.
I wonder if you've got a lot if there's not this sort of home interest or there's a lack of interest perceived from fans because there isn't a dynasty there, and whether or not fans American fans of European football are attracted to teams like Manchester United, Barcelona, Bayern because they've got this.
They've got stories, haven't they? Yeah.
And constant success over years and years and years. I don't know if that's the case at all, yeah. or whether or not they're attracted to names as we've become attracted to teams before in the past, purely on the fact that they've got nice names. or the fact that you pick them out at random when you're playing Championship Manager once. I mean, this is another thing, going back to the original's top topic. I've got teams all over the place that I don't necessarily follow, but when I hear them coming through on the video printer on a Saturday, I go, oh yeah, right, okay, well, they won. Flexis Kefin Druids. I took them to the group stage of the Champions League, and we actually scored at the San Siro.
Who against?
Against Milan. Shevchenko scored a hat trick. So it was not done dusted. When they came back to ours,
and this was when Shevchenko was playing.
Yeah.
Right. So it was, okay. So that's an impressive.
Well, because I'm playing 2001. Right, I'm not playing anything else since then. God, yeah.
I was going to say if it had been against Inter, it would have only won.
But, I think Graham, you're probably the only person on the show tonight with a Welsh team. I certainly don't have one.
Yeah. No, I don't. Oh, I guess the closest I went to see Aberystwyth Town once. I went to ABBA with a friend of mine who was feebly attempting to relive his student days after he started back work. There are a few things more pathetic in life than someone going back to your university town after you've left and got a job. But nevertheless, I indulged him. And we watched Aberystwyth Town. I forget who they played. They won. It's actually quite a tidy little ground, actually. It's quite nice.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. And bonus football. I wasn't expecting to go and watch football there.
A friend of mine went to Romania to watch Abba Town in Europe.
No way.
Yeah. Strange but lovely bloke. But
that's hardcore.
It was pretty hardcore.
I doff my hat to that commitment.
Yeah, I think he tends to go to Bath City now. I think knows Ken Loach quite well, but through being a City fan.
Do you, Chris, I don't know whether you're, Graham, you'll probably remember this, but I don't know whether or not this is something that I think that's kind of drifted away now, but there was a tradition for some time amongst English fans to adopt a Scottish team.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think the globalisation and the internet has kind of ruined that now because you know, you can adopt. And I wonder to an extent whether or not the overseas team is perhaps a continuation of that same sentiment.
It probably is.
You'd adopt a Scottish team. You wouldn't ever get the chance to watch them because there was very little Scottish coverage on football. I mean, this we're talking 70s, 80s, aren't we? We're talking a long time ago. And you used to bet. I forget who mine were. I think they might have been Raith Rovers. I don't know whether you ever got
involved. No, I didn't get involved.
But I knew plenty of people who did.
Mm.
They got involved in and adopted a Scottish team. Perhaps, you know, what we're seeing now is perhaps a kind of continuation of that, people supporting teams from overseas. And, of course, now, what with the internet and all, they can actually watch those games.
Yes.
And actually have some kind of stake.
Yeah, I mean, it is fraught with peril, isn't it, though, like getting other teams? Because I know we when we're at Whiteley from on a Saturday about 3:15, you'll check the half times, won't you?
Yes, yeah.
Coming in from Germany,
yeah.
And obviously, like, we've got the scores coming in from Palace and Arsenal, and there have been times when all four of our clubs have been doing absolutely crap.
That's true.
Occasionally, sometimes, like, stars align and everyone wins, and it's a happy day. But, you
know. Well, it was good on Saturday, wasn't it?
Up until we started shipping
goals. We almost had all our plates spinning. It was Arsenal of all teams.
And a last minute penalty to stop the whole.
Dortmund 1, Palace 1, Whiteleaf 1, 4-0, and Arsenal almost won, but didn't, and then that would have been 4-4. That is quite rare.
We've got just under 5 minutes left, so we'll move on to Whiteleaf and non-league, because that's another area where all three of us have managed to identify with something completely different, which I started in my mid-20s and have carried on. And we all attend non-league pretty regularly, and we all have a team. I don't get to see mine as much as I'd like to anymore, but I go and watch others. Where does that fit onto the spectrum? Because that, if anything, is even a sort of a more committed level of support than you need for a Premier League team.
I think for me it's easier because Whiteleaf are about 10 minutes walk away from my house. So it's a bit of a no-brainer to actually see. Well, it was to see Isthmian League football just at the bottom of my road. And you know, it's nice because, you know, I have known Terry for about 30 years, and not sharing a club. We go and see games together, but invariably it's like one of us has got more of a vested interest than another. And the only other time that we've ever like gone to a club and been fully behind the same team is when we go over to Germany. So it's been quite nice to actually go and watch football in a crowd.
Yes,
I think that's what happens when you get older as well. Is the fact that that most of your mates, unless you meet your mates through football, it's not necessarily going to be the case that you all follow the same team.
Mm.
And you know, especially if you get most of your friends come from
not in London anyway. Yeah. I'm being snob, but I don't know. But I mean, given the diverse population of London, I mean, there's people who come into London from all over, and they've got various claims to various teams from all over the country, and there's loads of teams in London. So generally speaking, I mean, where I grew up, I would suggest that most of the kids who supported a football club at my school supported a team that wasn't Crystal Palace. But I grew up in a Croydon school, so.
And it's also interesting as well, because you find teams like Charlton, Fulham, even teams like Brentford and Orient picking up people like that because they've moved to London.
Yeah,
and want to go and see some.
And they
football.
Want to go and see a game. Yeah. What was I going to say? I think non-league football for me is it's what Graham was talking about, was the social dimension. I think that I went to Crystal Palace. I bought a season ticket for Crystal Palace a couple of seasons ago for the first time in years, and I had a miserable time. One, because we were awful, but also because I went on my own and I was bored. I just got bored. And I've sort of resolved, I won't go back regularly to Palace until, you know, maybe one of my mates is in a position where he can, you know, start going again regularly. Maybe we'll come back with him and do it that way, because I don't think I'll go back on my own. Even if we were winning, I don't think I'd have. Don't think, there's only two stops on the train, but I don't think I think can do that because for me, going to watch football is a social experience, and so non-league I think works really, really well because you can adopt a club to an extent, enjoy supporting that club, but you don't necessarily feel as though it's the end of the world if whatever happens. You can just have a good time.
Yes, of course. Well, if other results conspire against you, then it's an awful day.
Cool. I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up then, because we've pretty much come back to the last topic that we spoke about when I was last on the show. So, thanks very much for listening. It's been an absolute pleasure, chaps, to present the show for the first time. An absolute joy to talk to you. So thank you very much for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thanks, Chris. We appreciate it very much. We hope you come back again.
Definitely will do. So that's it for episode 131. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
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 You can contact the show at sofpodcast.com. Contact us on Twitter at Sound of Football, and we're also on Facebook at facebook.com/SoundOfFootball.